David, good morning.
Good morning, Nathaniel.
So, David, to start off with, what trends are we seeing in Australia's student test results?
Well, we've known for some time that on these international comparison tests, which look at over 50 countries, Australian students' performance have been falling since they started in 2000. We've been falling compared to other countries, so we've been falling in relative terms, but we've even been falling in absolute terms, so our scores are just getting worse. That's been understood for a while now. What we sought to ask was, well, are students in the top and the bottom of the kind of performance ladder, are they behaving differently? Are they performing differently? And it turns out that students at the bottom are falling much quicker than students at the top, almost 50% further than students at the top. And we reckon that's a real concern.
And what exactly is the relationship between these test results and our GDP? And how do you describe an economic value to test results?
So, look, the first thing to say is education is more than just an economic value. So it's important to state at the outset that education has a much broader social value than simply its economic impact. But its economic impact is, of course, important too. What the OECD does is a set of analysis that says, look, if a country has a 50-point fall in its test results, and your typical score is about 500, so if a country has a 50-point fall in its test results, it loses about 0.9% of its long-term GDP growth. So every year, the economy would grow 0.9% slower than it otherwise would have if the results had stayed the same. What we've done is said, okay, well, what does that mean? If you project it out over the working life of someone who sat the test last time around in 2015, and we've calculated that a touch under $120 billion in cost to Australia.
Right, $120 billion, that's a lot of money. Now, you attribute the disparity between students at the bottom and those at the top to educational inequality. What exactly is educational inequality?
Well, there's different ways of measuring it. There's different dimensions of educational inequality. One way you can think about it is what are the inputs that we're putting in the system, and across many dimensions, whether you're looking at teacher coverage or access to learning resources or access to the kind of curriculum subjects that typically deliver higher ATAR scores, students at the top are getting much better inputs than students at the bottom. And then, of course, you look at the other end, what comes out in terms of the performance outcomes, and it's no surprise, given the inequality in inputs, that students at the bottom are falling further and faster than those at the top.
Right. Now, if you're just joining us here on The Daily this morning, we're speaking with David Hetherington, Executive Director of the Public Education Foundation, about the impacts of educational inequality on Australia's GDP. Now, David, your paper evaluates the economic impacts of the declining performance and educational inequality. What sort of social impacts do you think we'll see because of this?
Well, it's interesting to think about how it affects all of us, and this is the message we really want to convey out of this piece of work, is that a narrow way of reading this is to say, well, it only affects kids at the bottom, and that's only a small subset of the population, and if my family members or my household's not in that group, well, that's okay. But that's not the case. What happens over time is it affects all of us. A lesser educated society has a lower quality of life, lower living standards, less opportunities, less participation in community activities. So there's a whole bunch of impacts. You know, that there is a narrow economic impact in terms of GDP growth, but there's a whole bunch of kind of impacts around quality of life and living standards and participation in society that we wear if we don't address this problem.
And what kinds of recommendations do you have that for how we can reduce the inequality and hopefully the projected GDP loss?
Well, first and foremost, you've got to address the kind of the elephant in the room in education policy over the last decade or so, which is the funding debate. Now, happily, both sides of politics have now accepted that needs-based funding is the right way to go. So you're funding disproportionately to the most needy students in schools, But in reality, we're still a long way off that. The first round of Gonski reforms under the Gillard government did a good job in that it put more money in the system than is currently being proposed. But what's happened in the second round under the Turnbull government is that they have accepted that even though they're going to put less money in, the schools that are currently overfunded should have their funding brought back to the appropriate standard, and that extra money can be used to support and invest in schools that are currently underfunded. So there's good parts to both programs. We need the higher quantum of funding, and we need it to be directed appropriately. And then there are a set of other more innovative interventions, if you like. Where you've got second teachers who might be working outside the classroom with disadvantaged kids, where you've got these alternative learning programs, they call, where sometimes they take kids who are struggling outside of the classroom to do different project-based learning activities. We also call in this report for a share of places in selective schools to be made available to comprehensive students, because we think there's a real value in mixing students of different abilities. The spillover effect, if you like, is really important.
Right. Well, hopefully some of these things can be implemented to kind of alleviate these issues. David, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Nathaniel. Appreciate it.